ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Jules and Jez here, and every week on Not Stupid, we chat about the news in your feeds.
State and Territory governments collected about $9 billion in gambling taxes in 2022-23.
That's a massive amount.
It's a substantial amount of
money. For states to unhook themselves.
It's a sugar hit that if you give that up.
But we haven't had that conversation.
No.
It's like, do we accept that social evil?
You can find Not Stupid on the ABC Listen app.
One Nation's support is surging. That's according to successive opinion polls this year, which have Pauline Hanson's party with a primary vote higher than it's ever been before. Today, Tony Barry, director at the Redbridge Group and former Liberal Party strategist, on the voters flocking to the populist political offering, whether it will translate into actual votes and why the major parties need to take notice. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Tony, we're going to unpack what seems to be a surge in support for One Nation and then consider whether or not it is as significant as some of the headlines seem to suggest. But look, why don't we just start with a very quick history lesson? Because One Nation, it's been around for, it seems like forever. And, Pauline Hanson, she was elected back in 1996, which is not forever ago, but it's a while now.
Yeah, it's the 30th anniversary coming up in March of her election. Of course, she was an endorsed Liberal candidate initially, but after the nominations closed, the Liberal Party federal executive made a decision to disendorse her over some comments that she made, and so she effectively ran as an independent. But she took her seat in Parliament as an independent. And then, of course, her maiden speech made huge headlines and elevated her profile.
Yeah.
I and most Australians want our immigration policy radically reviewed and that of multiculturalism abolished. I believe we are in danger of being swamped by Asians.
And some 30 years later, she's still here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the maiden speech was highly controversial, of course, but perhaps the most famous ushering in that year came when she said to a journalist, "Please explain."
Are you xenophobic? Please explain.
Xenophobia means a fear of all things foreign.
No, I don't think I am.
Which she never, ever really lived down, did she?
No, it was about xenophobia, but
yeah,
perversely that worked in her favour. I can remember we were doing focus groups at the time and most people were, what's a xenophobe, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so they sort of said, oh, she's like us, you know, I don't know what that means. And in many ways, the media class kind of mocking her over that sort of played into her hands because it made her the every person for a lot of voters who were looking for someone that represented them.
How interesting. All right. And then it was in 1997 that she actually helped to form the One Nation Party. And then, Tony, over many years, it was sort of an on-again, off-again proposition, right? She even went to jail for electoral fraud at one point for a few months, although that was then overturned.
Yeah, the interesting thing about 1998 was that that was the first federal election for One Nation. And they actually performed quite well. Around 8% or so primary vote. Back then, that was very significant because most of the vote went to the major parties back then. So that was the last election where One Nation had, you know, what I would call a significant impact on the election campaign. And here we are coming up to 27 years later, and they're bigger than they were, much bigger than they were on current voting than they were back then.
I've put up and I have spoken very loud and clear against The Voice, the first one against The Voice, about the COVID-19 jab, mass migration. It's also been about the climate change, you know, net zero. All these things, the public are no longer being, you know, treated like mushrooms.
So she's been around for a while, Pauline Hanson, but actually just tell me, how does that translate into seats at a federal level though? Because just because her party survives and she survives politically for a long time, it doesn't mean necessarily, does it, that it's a successful party?
Well, the big question right now is, you know, she's polling in the high teens, early 20s, depending on when you're polling. And on the face of it, that is a very significant number. There's no doubt about it. And it's arguably as competitive as the party formerly known as the Coalition. But I don't think we're going to have a better idea of how they're travelling until Election Day, because what we can't test and measure and have any confidence in is this a protest or is it a demonstration of power with voters? They want to empower One Nation, and are they parking their vote there? And will they come back to the Coalition? Most of their vote growth has come off the Coalition pile.
Right.
I think about 4% has come off Labor on our tracking. So a little bit off Labor, but mostly the Coalition. So that is what we're all going to be watching, and we won't really know until election night in 2 years' time, I suppose.
Mm, yeah. So this Coalition disarray has really helped One Nation in the polls.
Yeah, there's a few factors at play here, and we've sort of seen it coming on a qualitative basis in focus groups long before the quant started moving. And what we've been seeing is Gen X men in particular, very, very volatile vote cohort. And on our quantitative polling, 26% of Gen X men, and that's the ages of 45 to 60, are voting One Nation. So one in four Gen X men in Australia, urban, regional, white collar, blue collar, are voting One Nation. This cohort is feeling unloved, and there was an economic promise that they had in the early 2000s. And when Rudd came in, that economic compact promise of hope, of opportunity, they feel has evaporated or sort of barely delivered. And of course, for that younger Gen X cohort, those who are closer to the age of 45, they got into the property market typically when it was going particularly crazy. So they've got massive mortgages, and then overlaid is economic anxiety.
So these Generation X men, they're feeling, as you say, unloved, but really I suppose they're worried about their futures and they're finding things pretty hard day to day. But that doesn't explain to me why they find One Nation particularly appealing. I mean, they're not necessarily, are they liking the anti-immigration stance or supportive of One Nation ideals, or are they?
Well, it's mostly about the politics of grievance, which is a very powerful force, and we've seen that in the United Kingdom, the United States. And often, you know, when it's underpinned by reductive policy ideas, which are simplistic, it often appeals to that grievance. And so, you know, some of them are parking it there. Some of them find that that could be a solution, or it's at least acknowledging there's a problem for which they're crediting One Nation for. But how long that lasts, of course, you know, we really don't know. The challenge for the Coalition, though, is the economy, economic anxiety, economic security, housing attainability, not just for their generation, but, of course, they're worried about their children who are becoming teenagers and their future. The opportunity for the Coalition is actually to get back to their legacy strength of economic management, differentiate from Labor on that. It is the most salient issue. That is where most of the votes are, and that is where the best opportunities for them are strategically.
Just tell me as well, Barnaby Joyce, of course, defected to One Nation. Has that actually helped the party? 7:30 reporter Adam Harvey, he actually went out to his seat in Tamworth this week, and he really did find broad support from the young to the old for One Nation.
Still a massive voter base in the middle, and I think the Liberal Party's gone left of the middle. And I think One Nation, and that is, they're filling the void.
I believe that One Nation are listening to people, and they are best placed to represent my interests. I believe a lot of regional people are feeling the same.
Oh, I just thanked him for hopefully going to save our generation, because I know at the moment our country's been run by a bunch of idiots.
And Barnaby Joyce was suggesting he was actually following his voters to One Nation rather than them following him.
I had basically almost branches leave and join up and make One Nation branches. That was happening long before I was joined One Nation. So it's a wave, and I was part of it, and I wasn't the creation of it.
Yeah, well, Barnaby Joyce, regardless of what you think of him, is no idiot. He's a former Deputy Prime Minister. He does have a grasp of various portfolios and treasury. So he adds something that Pauline Hanson doesn't have. The interesting thing will be two huge personalities in the same party together, neither of which have got a great reputation for playing well with others. So that's the X factor, I think, in that relationship. But certainly it would not be implausible for his promotion in One Nation to grow their primary vote a little further. Though I think there is a ceiling on just how many votes One Nation can get.
All right, so Tony, One Nation has had this polling surge, and as you say, the election is still 2 years away, so that's all it is just at this point. But just tell me, what do you think it says about populist politics in Australia? Are we actually seeing this shift in voters' minds and a shift in the right more broadly?
I think a large part of it is a failure of the major parties to explain their policies. Immigration is a classic example. I don't think the current government or recent governments have done a particularly good job in that particular policy space. I'm a high-end consumer of media, and I'm not even sure what their strategy is on that. Mm. And equally, that same rationale applies to economic reform. There's not an awful lot of explanation. There's assertions by government that, say, renewable energy is important and necessary, but there's not a lot of explanation behind it to the electorate. I think this sort of rise of populism is a reaction to that, a failure of recent governments on both sides and state governments to explain the policies and why they're doing what they're doing.
All right, well, Tony, a key question is, can One Nation become a party of influence by the sheer number of seats it has in the parliament? At the moment, across the Senate and House of Representatives, that number is 5. So it would have to be substantially more than that.
So assuming that their current vote share is power and not protest, and it grows a little bit more, you still need those votes to fall in the right places. You'd expect some regional seats would be the seats of best opportunity. But it's also going to depend on preference flows and how the major parties preference on their how to vote cards and voter discipline. You know, of course, not everybody follows how to vote cards. And there's also the question of, you know, you do need party infrastructure, and One Nation certainly has an enthusiastic base of volunteers, but they're yet to be tested on running a national campaign and all the moving parts, including fundraising that comes with that, because they'll need serious money. But I think it's very early to be predicting how many seats they're going to win. But if the Liberal Party decides in their wisdom to roll Susan Lee after less than a year in the job, there could be a by-election in Farah coming up soon, and that might be an interesting test for One Nation.
Okay, all right, so we will have to wait and see and wait till the actual election, of course, in a couple of years' time. But given her performance in the polls and One Nation's performance in the polls that we're seeing now, does that mean that the party does have power in the sense that it can shift the major parties, shift key policies?
Yeah, and we're seeing that already, because they're effectively moving the National Party to the right. Some elements of the Liberal Party are following suit. There's obviously anxiety in the coalition about their critically low primary vote. They're in the low 20s at the moment. They need to be at least in the early 40s, ideally 45. In real terms, that's 3.4 million extra voters, give or take a couple hundred thousand. That's a lot of votes they've got to find. And I'm not sure there's a lot of votes on the table on some of those populist right issues. And so my advice to the coalition is if you want to be competitive again, focus on the most salient issue to voters, which is going to most influence their vote considerations, which is the economy and its relationship to housing, and come up with differentiated policies from Labor on that. John Howard did an interview with Troy Bramston in December where he appealed to the Liberal Party to be bold on economic reform. And one idea he suggested, it was just a suggestion, was perhaps increase the rate of GST and then offset that with significant income tax cuts. Because if young people want to get ahead financially and build wealth and buy houses, the best way is to give them more of their income back. So that's one idea they can pursue, but it's going to require a lot more imagination than the last election.
Tony Barry is a director at the political research and strategy company, the Redbridge Group, and he's a former deputy state director of the Liberal Party. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.